Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 268, recorded September 28th, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello. Our apologies for our absence last week.
Yeah, we had all kinds of things going on. Illness first.
And Comic-Con.
Yes, and visitors and things. So
visitors for Comic-Con.
Yes, and it was good.
It was fun, but
everything
it was busy.
Was fun except for the illness.
Yes.
So we're back, and hopefully you've had a chance to check out the axolotl picture or video of the axolotl eating a worm. Finally, we got a fairly decent video of it, so we posted it.
Okay. So this week we have Matt in Perth, Western Australia, JR in Kentucky, and Joe in Michigan.
Yes, so let's start out with
Matt. And Matt says, his pictures from last time, remember, they didn't come through the email,
right.
So he resent the pictures.
And they came through!
Mm-hmm. And he says, the aquarium really is looking stunning right now. I can't believe how much plant growth I am getting. I guess that is what happens when you give the plants the best possible light and fertilizers. I will send some photos of the planted aquarium in a second email. Please let me know if they do not come through before doing your next podcast so I can try to resend them. But we did get them, so. I can see the Cabomba caroliniana and Vallisneria spiralis plants actually putting out feeders along the surface of the gravel and every so often putting down roots. It brings me a lot of joy looking at all the plant life. As for the fish inhabitants, they are all doing well. The three discus are all eating, and their gills are no longer red. Hooray!
Yeah.
That's good news.
It is.
The zebra danios are still swimming around frantically, and I bought 8 bright yellow mollies recently, which are also adding some color. Then you can see the fluorescent blue ram swimming around the bottom of the tank, and the vibrant peppermint bristlenose chewing away on a bit of wood. The nanomarine is also doing well. Wally is still alive and eating away at the copepods. He has yet to make any dent in their numbers, though, so I have excellent news regarding Alice the anemone. She has now got a twin. I never thought my anemone would reproduce asexually, but turns out Alice is a happy anemone who needs company. At night time, anemones shrink, and it was only at night that I noticed the anemone was attached in 2 different separate locations with no connection in between them. My 2 anemones live in the middle of my zinnia soft coral, who is also growing rapidly. The zinnia has easily tripled in size since I got it. Neither the zinnia nor the anemone seem to be bothered by living right up against each other. Unlike some corals which send out stinging tentacles, my zinnia does not. I think my favorite thing about the marine is it has a second life at night. The short polyp stony corals put out their tentacles at night. The 2 anemones become tiny as Nemo snuggles to go to sleep, and the copepods bust out of their hiding places to zoom around the aquarium. The numbers of baby snails is truly staggering. I estimate it is in the hundreds. Every surface appears to be covered in them. They have not, however, reached a concentration that can handle the nuisance algae. Hopefully that will happen soon. No questions this week, just an update.
Cool. Well, you should check out the pictures. We're posting Matt's pictures on the show page for this episode. You should check them out. The tank really does look very stunning.
It's very, very vibrant.
Yeah, so check it out. That would be cool. And it sounds like we need to get a picture or two of his nanomarine tank, too. Mm. It sounds fun. It's really cool that his anemone is now 2 anemones. It's always fun. I always liked it when my soft corals, you know, split, too. I'd get the mushroom corals would do that a lot, and that was fun. I like that kind of thing. And others, too. Never had a zinnia coral. It's kind of an interesting one because if it's pumping zinnia, it will move. They will kind of pulse in the water.
Interesting.
They look kind of, to me, like little palm trees that pulse.
Kind of swaying.
Well, they actually kind of open and close almost. It's kind of funny. Fun stuff. All right, let's go to our next contributor for the day.
JR in Eastern Kentucky. And he's giving us another update on the mix for
the citric acid baking soda mix.
Well, today was the last day for the mix. I only got a disappointing 21 days out of it, a bit short of the 30 I got last time. I think it will call it good enough for now and just stay with this last one and be happy with 20 to 30 days. Not even sure I want to keep the tank I'm running it on as a high light tank. I've been thinking about switching it over to low to medium light. We shall see.
Hmm. Well, that's pretty good, though. If you know you're going to get at least 20 days, somewhere between 20 and 30, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Even, you know, you're going to go on vacation, you can set it up before you go and so on. So that's good. Thank you for letting us know how that's been going. And also, let us know what you decide to do with that tank, if you're going to keep it on high light or not. I've, you know, sometimes switched tanks between high and medium light and different things and different regimens or different ways of getting them CO2, and it's interesting to see how they change and what happens. So.
Yep. Okay, Joe in Hudsonville, Michigan, and we actually have two from Joe.
Maybe even
right?
three.
Maybe even three.
There are several different ones, so if, we'll try to indicate when we have new email going on. Maybe that'll help.
So, first email, he says, I thought of another quick question. Does using a glass top between the light and the surface of the water change the properties or amount of light that gets to the plants?
And yes, it does, to some extent. And part of it is just, I think that when it goes through a different medium, the light refracts and it's going to change the angle a little bit. But as long as you keep the glass really clean on both the top surface and the bottom surface, it's usually not too much of an issue. Now, on the other hand, if you... That was funny. Did you see that?
I did see that.
Okay. Sorry.
We'll tell you that in just a second.
Yeah. Anyway, as long as you keep the top and the bottom of the glass clean, you shouldn't need to worry about it too much, but it does have some effect. And because glass is there, of course, it's reducing evaporation, which is good. It also helps keep fish from jumping out, but it tends to collect dust on the top surface and algae and or hard water stains on the bottom surface. Mm-hmm. So unless you can keep those under control, you're going to significantly reduce the amount of light that gets into the tank. So it's a good idea to take that off and clean it off frequently. And eventually, especially if you have hard water stains that get on there and stay there, you may not be able to get them off entirely. You may have to just replace the glass. I've had to do that a few times. So.
Okay. Should we tell them what just happened?
Yes.
That was kind of funny. I looked over in the goldfish tank and the Placo...
The little bristlenose Placo.
Yep. He was munching away at the bottom of the... You know, to see if there was anything on the bottom. I should wait until the airplane finishes going over the house.
Yes, enjoy the airplane while you can.
We get lots of those.
It's just an inevitable occurrence.
Close enough.
There we go.
So, we have a floating thermometer, one of the, you know, the normal stick kind that floats around in the water. And he was eating on the bottom of it to see if there was anything on it, but it... So he was vertical, and it was vertical, and it reminded me of, like, one of those old vaudeville acts, and they're balancing a cane on their nose. It looked like he was hopping, dancing along with this thing balanced.
Because the water current from the filter was kind of pushing him around in little circles, and he didn't seem to mind, and so it was really funny looking.
You want
to
know another funny thing?
What?
Tiki has once again made a protest with her food dish.
Oh, no, I think that was me. I had just washed it, and I set it back in. It didn't quite seat itself.
She gets mad if we haven't fed her yet, or she wants bugs instead of the gecko mix or something, she'll take her food dish out and toss it or upend it.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
She says, I want bugs. Okay.
Good thing
anyways,
we're raising crickets now. It helps.
Back to Joe.
Okay.
Should we go to his second email?
Yeah, I think we pretty much covered that first one. So, yeah, let's go to the next one.
Okay. He says, hello, Russ and Kelly. Note all of the oohs. Like a fellow Aquaramaxer, I enjoy hearing Kelly say hello, like Pooh Bear. I love Pooh Bear. He says, you, hello. Okay, that's my happy moment of the podcast. Thank you. I'm glad you like it. I love Pooh Bear. Okay. He says, side note, I don't think I ever explained what Bluefish Aquarium is. It is our local fish reptile store. I go there about once a week to see what I can't live without and let my oldest daughter, the big yellowhead, a.k.a. Ginny, watch the stingrays and pet the bearded dragon. That's a pretty cool fish store that has stingrays.
Yeah, and bearded dragons.
Yeah, that you can pet.
Mm-hmm.
Says, on to aquarium plant business. I am currently dosing the tank with Excel every other day, as I remember to, probably closer to 2 to 3 times a week. No fertilizer yet because I haven't asked or researched what to put in there. Russ asked about lighting. I have the 24-inch E-Live LED light on that tank. I just filled it up with 14 LED pods. Max output is 1,120 lumens. I am at 830 lumens, as I have some I have two plant growth, two color enhancing, and two HD color enhancing pods that have slightly less lumens but a broader color spectrum than cool white. The tank is rather shallow at 12 inches overall and about 9 3/4 inches to the substrate.
Okay, well, those are some good things to know. I would say, you have a pretty good chance of doing okay because the tank's quite shallow. And it sounds like the LED light is probably enough to get some plants doing pretty well. And fertilizer-wise, you know what I would suggest starting out with? If you're not going to go really crazy with it and get some super high-intensity lights or anything, just do... See if you can boost that Excel up so you're doing it actually every other day, because that will make a difference. And then... just use Seachem Comprehensive Plant Supplement. And let me see if I can remember the dose that I would do. Hopefully I'm remembering right, but every other day, a regimen that's worked well for me is, I believe it was, I want to make sure I say it right. Okay. I had an eyedropper, and I think it was, for a 20-gallon tank, I would use 4 cc's of the Comprehensive Plant Supplement. I think it was. It was similar to the dosage that I would use for Excel, the Flourish Excel. And on that regimen, with my particular tank, I did okay. I mean, it depends widely on your tank, and you'll have to decrease and increase the dosage depending on the situation, you know, and how your plants are doing, but... you could start out with that and see how it goes. If you've got, you know, a lot of plants in there, including some stem plants that are growing fast, I would do that. If you don't, I would reduce it considerably. But the Comprehensive Plant Supplement is pretty good. It's got, you know, it's comprehensive. It's got a lot of things in it that the plants do well with. And I've never found that unless you have a high-tech tank with a lot of growth where they're really sucking, you know, nitrates or things like that out of the water too fast, that, you know, if it's a medium, low to medium light tank like that, usually does really well on that. So that would be something to try.
Okay.
Hopefully I'm not messing up the dosage, but that particular regimen has worked really well for me in the past.
He also says, I'm not against the thought of CO2 for the tank, but it would have to be a pressurized system. I doubt I could sneak smelly past the rest of my family. For the immediate future, I will have to do without CO2 because I have hit my invisible spending limit on the tank.
Totally understandable.
Yep.
But it sounds like the citric acid baking soda method is, you know, cheaper than a pressurized system, but it has the advantage of not stinking. So that might be something to think about, too.
Says, I can't remember if you had any other questions, so I will send this along in hopes that if you have other questions, you can shoot me an email before the next show. Thanks, Joe and Hudson. Oh, and he spelled Michigan out, and then he says, I hope the full spelling of Michigan helps out, Kelly. Thank you. It's nice when people take care of my poor brain. Okay, do we indeed have a third one?
Yeah.
We do have a third one. Okay. He says, hi again, I noticed something a little strange on our tank today. I haven't been using a tank lid. It seems that there were several strands of spiderweb going from the tank rim and the light diagonally down and terminating on the surface of the water. I have attached my best attempts of a phone picture. The only thing you can see is the reflection of the LED lights, red, white, and blue, reflecting on the strand. Is this actually a spiderweb? The part that baffles me is it terminating on the surface. Well, that is all for now. Hope you're having a great week, Joe.
Okay, well, I did actually send Joe an email about this, but it is a pretty bizarre situation, and I was speculating as to what could be the cause of it. I have seen spiders, like the jumping spiders, leave drag lines and then drop them. And since jumping spiders have this unusual ability to actually jump while they're upside down and still land on the surface they're jumping on.
They must have been what bit Spider-Man, I think.
Something like that, yeah. And so I've seen them do it. They do that. It's incredible. I've seen them catch prey, like on an upside-down surface kind of thing. They'll jump and still get to it.
They're like a cartoon.
Yeah. And I was wondering, since they often will put down drag lines, they don't build webs per se, but they do release strands of silk. So that if they fall off of something, for example, they can get back on, things like that. So they'll let out a drag line, and sometimes they'll let it go, and if they were doing that, and then they let it go, then it could make sense that then it would fall down into the water. So part of it would end in the water, and the other part would be attached to something else.
Either that, or we've got scuba diving spiders.
Well, they have those too. They've got those diving spiders.
Oh, yeah.
They create those little diving bells with the webs and everything.
That's pretty amazing.
I'm sure that's not what's going on in this situation, but...
Do you think they have their own National Geographic channel, and they're, like, filming things for the Spider Exploration Society?
That would be too cool.
I don't know. I don't want spiders to be that smart, then they'll take over the world.
They already have.
Oh.
In a sense. Yeah, so if you happen to find out any more about that, we'd be interested to know. But that's just some speculation that I have based on observations of spiders. So, interesting thing.
I think that's everything, unless we have anything else.
That should be just about it for this week that I can think of. So, until next time.
May the fish
be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.